Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
If you're constantly on the hunt for a good deal, then you need Rakuten. Rakuten is the smartest way to save money when you shop because members get cash back at over 3,500 stores across every category, including fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, traveling, dining, and more. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while you're doing it? It's a no-brainer. Get the Rakuten app now and join the 17 million members who are already saving. Cashback rates change daily. See Rakuten.com for details. That's Rakuten. Your cashback really adds up.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1040. Say, if you live in America, so do I, and I'll be traversing this land of ours for the Wizard Guitar Tour, which starts January 24th and 25th in Columbus, Ohio, at the Columbus Funny Bone, and then the following weekend in Philadelphia at Helium, and then other dates booked through the summer right now: San Francisco, Sacramento, Brea, California, Portland, Oregon, Boston, Denver, Bloomington, Indiana, Minneapolis, Austin, Texas, Cleveland, Ohio, Nashville, some dates in Florida, Phoenix later in the year, and then more dates to be added soon. If you go to ID10T.com/tour, you can get tickets and info on all that business. So come on out. I will be bringing the aforementioned Wizard Guitar with me. And if you want high fives or you want me to sign something or whatever, then by all means. Okay, so let's talk about you, the ID10T community, events at ID10T.com. Like Brandon, who writes, I make pictures out of tiny squares and post them online for fun. I'm, of course, talking about pixel art or 8-bit art, like the kind seen in retro video games. Oh, Brandon, I remember when those were just called video games, because I'm old. Anyway, he says, it's been a hobby of mine for about 5 years, and I've started a YouTube channel to share tutorials, narrated time lapses, and concept to completion videos. Check it out if you're interested in slinging squares or just looking for a new and unique art channel. It is youtube.com/BJGPixel, or his work on Instagram is Brandon James Greer, G-R-E-E-R. And again, that is on the Instagrams. Thank you, Brandon, for putting some 8-bit art into the world. This episode is Michelle Monahan, who has been on the podcast many times. She is a friend of mine who also happens to be a phenomenal actor. She's been in a ton of amazing stuff. Look her up, but you know who she is. And she is on a new Netflix series called Messiah, which is streaming right now. And just a super cool lady who, I don't know, it was just a great conversation. It was the first podcast recorded in 2020. We recorded this just a couple days ago. She came over to the house and it was like a nice catch-up chat with some good nuggets of wisdom in there too. And she told me, by the way, about a documentary. I mean, she mentions it in the body of the podcast, but a documentary called The Biggest Little Farm, which Lydia and I watched on Hulu, and it is phenomenal. Michelle grew up on a farm. She knows from farm life, but even if you don't know anything about farms or understand anything about farms, The Biggest Little Farm is such an amazing human story about this couple who decides to go just drop everything and go try to build a sustainable farm, and it is phenomenal. So I am not only pitching that you watch Michelle's show Messiah on Netflix, but that also you watch The Biggest Little Farm I'm pretty sure we watched it on Hulu. Anyway, you have the resources to look it up. There's a very smart computer in your pocket that has access to the sum total of all human knowledge. You can find it. So that's that. This is the episode 1040 of the ID10T podcast with Michelle Monahan.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
We'll be right back.
curtain. We were gone for like a week and a half, so yeah, we just kind of shut the house down.
And let's bring it back to life,
now,
dude.
It's slowly, like we came home and it was weirdly musty. Like we were really gone for a week. Haunted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's ghost children in the house now. I don't think they
That's
were here
exciting,
before.
Exciting, dude.
Oh my God, Lydia would be thrilled. She's convinced the house is haunted.
Is she?
Yes.
Does she see ghosts, or do you see ghosts?
I don't
or...
see anything. She right. hears
certain things.
She's had multiple accounts of, I thought you came home. I heard the door close. I heard someone.
That's so interesting.
I called out to you. You didn't answer. So I came downstairs and you weren't. Your
car
wasn't
here. That's so interesting. Have you ever had like a medium or anybody come and like kind of.
No. I mean, she would love that.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's an electrician who comes and works on the house, like when electrical stuff, obviously when electrical stuff goes down. And he worked for the previous owners of the house. And he said he's seen a lot of funky stuff.
Interesting.
And so she's all in.
Electricians don't lie.
they never lie. Totally affordable.
Yeah, exactly.
Always on time.
Exactly.
No, but it is. So she's convinced.
Yeah.
She's like,
oh, that's so interesting.
This house is definitely haunted, and I'm like, it's definitely not. And we have it. Do you watch the ghost shows ever? Do you watch?
No, I've seen them. But I don't necessarily watch them or whatever, but I do believe in all of that.
Like you do.
Yeah, my husband's had a couple of encounters.
Really?
Yeah, in our old house in New York. I never have. So it's kind of one of those things that like I do believe it exists, but yet, you know, who it exists for is different.
I mean, I don't think I'm such a skeptic that if I turned the corner and there was just some like floating ghost, I'd be like, you're not real.
Exactly.
Of course I would fully shit my pants.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just have yet to.
Yeah, to encounter it.
I just have yet to
and
encounter
And I sort
it.
Of don't want them in my house.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, you know what? They're cool. They're
Maybe
yours.
It's their house, Michelle. Maybe it's their house.
That's the thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought it'd be fun to pitch, not that I, you know, really want to do this kind of show, but I think it'd be fun to do a show with Lydia where we go and because we like to restore houses.
Yeah.
We go and restore a house, and part of the house restoration is she has to like cleanse it.
Yeah.
And then I come in and I'm like, seriously? What are you
true.
Waving around? What are you burning in the house?
Exactly.
Are you really we're doing this?
Exactly.
So it's just that, because I'm sure there are a lot of relationships where one is into it and the other person isn't.
Yeah.
And
it's true.
And
then
you
they're conflicting.
And
you're
then
like, I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. Right? Like, you know what I mean? There's something underneath my bed or in my closet. That's okay. Just
oh my God. So Pete has seen ghosts or
yeah,
he's.
So he's seen them.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. He's seen them and he's had one experience where it was like pulling him out of bed. Where he was like, it was a very visceral thing, and if he talks about it, he gets like, yeah,
he gets really upset.
He gets like, that was like for real, and there was no denying it. And that was a really interesting.
Did your kids ever do creepy things?
No, kids never seen creepy. Kids have never. Willow, definitely not creepy. Tommy, I sort of think that he. I don't know. I don't know if he's got an imagination or if he sees things and likes to talk to them. But you know what I mean? That one I'm not quite. He's like, he's a really interesting little kid. He's like very, he's like an empath and, you know, was born like a few minutes before Halloween. So.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I always think like there's something else a little deeper going on there with him.
Oh
but
my
he's
gosh.
A really special kid.
I'm telling you, if Lydia could engineer a Halloween baby.
Yeah. That would be it, right?
She would, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if in, let's see, so if emergency, that would be like February.
Yeah, it's Valentine's Day babies.
Valentine's Day babies lead to,
it's like a Valentine's Day situation.
I wouldn't be surprised if around April she was like, surprise. No more birth control.
Exactly.
And we're having a Halloween baby. And
exactly.
You're going to like it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it is our favorite favorite holiday.
Yeah, exactly.
Of all time. Oh, by the way, Pete is an Aussie, yes?
Yes, he
How
is.
How is he with the
So he's
fires?
He's fortunately, you know, most of our friends and family are in Victoria, which is the state, the province below. And they're doing okay. They're safe from the fires from now, but it is, I mean, as we all can see, it's absolutely
it's unreal. We're just unreal. Seeing this footage of these just poor, like, charred animals,
yeah.
and the sky is red. I mean, it must seem apocalyptic.
Yeah, it from the sounds of it, it is. I mean, we've got friends that are in Sydney that are just saying the air quality, of course.
Of course.
Even if you're not impacted directly by the fires, you're impacted by the smoke, and the smoke now has come down to it's going to Victoria. So even, you know, taking refuge at a beach and things like that, you're still, you know,
the
smoke inhalation, all of that. It's just, it's like 500,000 animals, I think, is the way that I understand it right now.
Really devastating. I mean, I'm so glad Pete's okay. I'm glad he's okay.
Thank you.
I'm glad his family's okay.
But you know, anybody that can go out there, you know, I just posted something on my Instagram, actually. So you can go to my Instagram and there's places where you can directly make an impact and give assistance in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, the thing is, I think that we all need to realize, like, this is just all of our problem.
Right,
you know,
right.
This is, like, what's happening there has happened here, not to that extreme, thank God, but it's possible that it could and anywhere else in the world. And so it's just so important to realize that we all need to make an impact.
And,
you know, even in our daily lives, you know, even when some of our governments are not, you know, that we all realize that we need to be responsible for, you know, our environment in this actual very real climate fight.
Are you in LA for just to promote Messiah? Or
no, I'm here.
You're here.
Yeah, so I live just down the road from you.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
We're really close. So,
oh, good.
I've been traveling. I've been working up in Vancouver, I'll head back up there tomorrow. But
this
is home. This is home.
It is. So you had a little bit of a holiday break, but Vancouver is where you're shooting.
Exactly.
For how long now?
Until the end of January.
Got it.
Yeah.
Netflix tried to send us a screener, but we were in a hotel in Maui, which, by the way, let me just say, Maui was amazing, and I apologize for this. This is not a complaint. I don't want this to sound like a complaint. There's almost no internet.
Wow.
They have it. Yes, of course they have it, but it's
that's
very clear.
That's why Woody Harrelson lives there.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense now. But it's funny because a lot of places where you go, it's like, oh, I got full signal, but it just doesn't work.
Right, right.
And so I asked one of the locals there. I was like, oh, and of course, sounding like a dipshit mainlander, hey, how come it says? Yeah. And he was like, yeah, you just don't know. He goes, I've lived here for years and years. I still haven't figured it out yet.
Wow.
So there's no, like, we just really couldn't use the internet much, so I wasn't able to – we weren't able to stream it.
It's okay.
So I apologize.
No worries. And by the way, you were on holiday. So at some point, you know, you just got to, do work.
But watching a show isn't work for us. It's a fun thing to do. Like, it's a fun thing to do. Yeah. But but it's very clear. And then there's that reminder of, like, yeah, you shouldn't be looking at your fucking phone because there's whales and nature and it's gorgeous.
Exactly.
Have you been? Have you spent a lot of time
there? I've never been to Maui, but we've spent a lot of time in Kauai and Honolulu Bay. And that's honestly one of our favorite places on Earth. It's absolutely stunning there. So I don't know if you – I'll go to Maui if you check out Honolulu
Bay. I've been to Kauai and I love it. But it was a long time ago, but I had never been to Maui. And my wife's mom took us all to Maui and convinced us. I was the only person that needed convincing. I went up in a helicopter. Have you done that?
Yes, yes. Yeah, many times.
Oh, I was terrified to do it. But then once I did it, I was fine.
Yeah, it is terrifying. But it is one of those things, like, if there is somewhere where it's that kind of landscape where, you know, it's beautiful seeing it on land. But if I can get in the sky and see those waterfalls and the rainforest and all – just that particular region. We had done it once and it was so beautiful. And then we brought my folks there. And I was like, my mom and dad have to, you know, they live in Iowa. You know
yeah, of course.
They just see, like, farmland.
It's just flat.
I'm like, mom, dad, trust me. Like, you got to take this ride with us. And just to see that, it was absolutely stunning. It's very special.
We had a cool helicopter pilot. It was one
they're
of those,
all cool. Come on. they fly choppers. They're all
cool.
Fucking cool.
They're cool. the two things. Well, so I was the whole family was like, you don't have to do this if you don't want. And I'm like, no, it terrifies me. So I have to do it.
Yes.
It's a new year. Like, I can't not do it.
Yeah.
And so I just made a deal with myself. I'm going to get over this. And I did. And the pilot was cool because I was trying to play the Jurassic Park theme on my phone.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, I got that. And he played it in the helicopter. So as we're flying through these cliffs, we're just hearing, dun, 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 dun. So that was fun. He did not have the Magnum PI theme, but otherwise.
Oh,
it was
my
fun.
God, that's amazing. That's a great idea, is to like be playing it or is, the Raiders of the Lost Ark,
yes.
Right? Like all of that, they just be playing the theme song.
It is so, it enhances the experience so much to be able to hear that because it's the helicopters. I'd never been in one before, and they maneuver in like dragonfly. It's so.
When they bank, bank really hard, you're like, oh,
banking
so
or just
fierce.
Spinning in place and just going straight up.
Yeah.
And it was really, really, really incredible.
Yeah.
What's your favorite place? What's your favorite place to go on Earth? Do you and Pete have a special?
Well, I will say that Hanalei Bay, I think, is right up there.
Yeah.
And then also, we love Byron Bay in
Australia.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, my gosh. Of course.
Yeah. And that's kind
there.
Of like the Australian version, I guess, of Hanalei Bay.
Yeah.
But he's a big surfer. He loves to be by the ocean. I like to surf as well, even though I'm not that great. But we enjoy like that kind of vibe and just cruisy, kicking, like anywhere we can have our shoes off
mm-hmm.
for like the entire week. And just like hanging out and feet in the sand.
That's so interesting. It's so adorable and wonderful that you two found each other. Like farm girl and like Australian surfer guy.
Well, we met in a bar, so that says a lot. That's where you find a farm girl and an Australian surfer dude. You meet in a bar in New York and that's how it happens.
Oh, that's really nice. That's really, really nice. I mean, it is such a – like I don't generally consider myself an outdoorsy person, but being outside of Maui, I'm like, being outside is great.
Yeah.
Don't know if I could surf. Even just snorkeling, I feel like I inhaled so much seawater.
You know what? It's a little – I will say that snorkeling makes me really – like being in – because I was never really in the water. I mean, I don't even think I experienced the ocean until I was 19 – like 18, 19 for the first time. And so, you know, Pete's gotten me really comfortable with it. But I remember the first time we went snorkeling, I was sucking so much – you know, because it all – like every – so, like I'm more comfortable jumping out of a plane for real than like diving in like into the ocean and like, you know, I'm sucking on my, you know, I'm diving the air. I'm like going to run out of air in like 5 minutes because I can't like neutralize my breath.
Yes.
It's all about the breathing.
Yeah.
And it's like that's
really
difficult.
But also if you duck below the surface just a little bit and you could breathe in,
Exactly.
You know, because you're not paying attention.
Or you get it in your goggles and shit. Like, oh God.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to kick up and let it go. But you have this thing and then you
fogging and then like the flippers are digging into your toes.
And everybody else and they're super cool and they got the flippers in motion.
It's always that. Yeah, there's some like fucking 8-year-old kid who's just like Aquaman dipping down.
Yeah,
like my ears won't pop. This is weird. Why am I trying to pretend to be a fish?
Exactly.
But it was great. Surfing terrifies me. It really just feels like one of those things where I'm going to get hit in the face with my own board.
Yeah, it does. It all happens. The fin, like, cuts your foot. Like, all of the above happens. But then when you actually catch that wave and you surf it and you can feel it, it's so exhilarating. It's kind of like golfing, you know?
Sure.
And it's like you just have a shit hit every single time. Then all of a sudden, like, you know, just have a great drive or whatever it is.
Yes.
It keeps you coming back for more.
That is an analogy. So I've played golf my whole life. My grandfather played. I worked at golf courses all through college. I haven't played in years.
Yeah.
And I started playing a little bit last year. And I played great. And then I realized, like, oh, fuck, this is how it happens. You don't play for a long time, so you forget all your mistakes.
Yeah, yes.
And then you're like, I should do this. And you start doing it, and then you just
– oh, my God.
Snowball mistakes. Yes. And you're like, oh, I got to put the left arm and then hips. And then all of a sudden you're in it, and then you play like shit, and then you have to quit for two more years again.
Oh, my God, that is so how it goes.
Yeah.
Because it's so interesting. Like when you just like let go, you completely let go, and you're just present. You're just doing it for fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you decide, you're like, I need to take this fun a little bit more serious and make it my official fucking hobby so I can suck at it.
Exactly. Yeah, I just need to get good enough at it again so I can be awful and get angry at it to where it's not fun at all. And I'm like, why am I doing this for 5 hours? And these people won't just fucking hit the ball and drive. Like
oh my God.
How'd you play? I didn't know you played.
No, I mean, I used to play. Like growing up, I played a little bit. But it's one of those things, like, whenever I go home to Iowa, you know, there's not a lot to do there in the summer, but we've got a golf course near our house, and I'll go hit the ball around a little bit. And, you know, I'm encouraged because I'm like, oh, wait, I'm not that bad. I'm very good on the green. I'm a really good putter. So that's kind of the better part of my game. So I like playing, like, a best shot. You know what I mean? With your group of people.
Right, whoever gets the best shot.
Like, I will carry us through. I will carry us through, team. You know, I just need somebody to get us there. So I enjoy it. But, like, in terms of, you know, actively pursuing it, I always think, like, I want to get up here at Griffith Park and do it or something, but I never get around to doing it.
It's a fun sport. It's a fun sport. It is nice to be outside for 4 or 5 hours. But the fucked up thing about golf is that if you play basketball or something like that, it's like you can make a mistake and within 2 seconds you can turn that shit around. Exactly. But with golf, you can have literally 17 and a half amazing holes.
Yes, it's true.
And then it just all unravels in the last,
it's so true.
You know, I was playing so great.
It's so true.
And then you can totally blow it. But it's a good metaphor for life, I think.
It is.
To just let everything
go. It's also a good thing to watch and nap to. I find, there's something about putting golf on, like, on a Saturday or Sunday, and the announcers, it's like almost meditative.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And then you hear, like, the faint clap.
I have a theory on this.
You do?
Yes.
And before I know it, like, because I actually really enjoy watching it, and then before I know it, like, I've woken up, and I'm like, shit, I just fell asleep during, you know, the Masters, third day of the Masters.
I know why it is, and it's not just because, you know, it can be boring to watch sports, but I think I think golf basically mimics all of the sounds we hear in the womb.
Right.
Where it's just all these, like, little, like, high-end noises. And then here we go. Like, it must be all that kind of weird.
Oh, my God. That is so interesting because you hear the sounds of nature. Right?
Yeah.
You hear the minimal clap, you know. It's like, yes, go to sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, go on.
It's just all that stuff. There's, like, a little bit of a sound barrier. You just get, like, bits and pieces of all the faint sounds of being in the womb in that sack. When we were good snorkelers... That's when we were good at snorkeling, was being in the womb. So I think it does just mimic all of those.
I love that theory.
Do you get to take a lot of time off, or do you just go from thing to thing to thing?
Do you know what? I took off after I finished shooting Messiah. That was about 6 or 7 months. I took most of the year off. I took about 7 months off.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it really was amazing. I really needed it. I ended my journey on the show because we shot in Jordan. I went on about a 2-week holiday there, and I went to Petra and Wadi Rum and went all over Israel. So that kind of – I've ended it with a vacation and then was just home and – you know, not shooting, kind of, you know, actively working on other things and stuff like that, but not actually committed to any project. And then I just sort of, you know, towards the tail end of the year, a couple of opportunities came up and I decided to go back to work. So typically it's one of, you know, you never know when jobs are going to come up.
Right.
Like and things kind of come together and then they ultimately fall apart and then something else kind of takes its place. So, I never really have a set thing in terms of, like, okay, now I'm going to take time off. With the exception of Messiah, where I was like, I really needed to take time off of that after that. But when I'm not taking time off, when I do decide to take time off, I really try to take full advantage of it by, like, squeezing in a nice family holiday if we can, or, you know, just doing, like, little road trips on the weekend, you know. And you can do that in California.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can take, like, a Friday off, you know, and just – we just try to go camping for the weekend, or we go to the beach for the weekend. Just things like that really feels restorative, you know, and, like – you know, feels like we're having great quality family time and, you know, doing things together.
Do you do full-on legit camping, like pitch the tent?
Yeah, I mean, we've done that. We go to, like, Burning Man and we pitch the tent, my husband and I, and we've done it here a few times. But we like to go up to this place up north where you get, like, this tiny little cabin.
Yeah.
And then we hang out there and we don't hoof it too much.
Right.
You know.
I feel like there's a nice balance. I feel like I'm too old now to start being like, I'm gonna learn how to tie a bunch of knots and make fire.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to be able to say that you can do that.
Oh, that'd
but
be
like,
great.
I don't. The idea, like, because we grew up doing it solely. My mom,
we
would pack up a tent in a Suburban, and we would drive out to, like, Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, and those were our summer vacations. But in doing that, like, my mom spent 2 weeks, like, prepping, like, coolers to make sure we had meals and food and things like that. And then we'd come home, and then she'd be unpacking all the gear, you know, with my dad's help, of course. But it was like, it's a lot of work to actually, like, hoof it and have that kind of vacation. You know what I mean? There's a lot of prep and, you know, and cleanup that involves that. So I like to go somewhere where I can pack up a cooler, but there's, like, there's food, like, you know, that I can easily access. And,
gosh, though, your mom, though, I have so much respect for that, because I feel like when we were growing up, maybe my mom was the exception to this, but I feel like if you grew up in the Midwest, probably your parents were just cool about stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? The kids, they're going to run around.
Yeah.
They're probably going to fall down. They might, you know,
yeah,
maybe a squirrel's going to bite them. Who knows?
Yes.
But whatever, it'll be fine. Like, we went to, like, a really nice resort in Maui, and I still, my bag is,
yeah,
like, okay, I have Neosporin, I have Pepto,
exactly.
I have, like, my bag is like a medicine cabinet,
yeah,
in a Best Buy, because it's,
yeah,
all power cables and then just any kind of medicine,
yeah,
you could need.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're a parent, as I assume I maybe will be for Halloween, who knows,
yeah,
if Lydia gets an idea.
Yeah.
But,
if I slip it to her.
Yeah, exactly. But how do you not, especially like when you're out in the wilderness, like, oh, don't touch it. Oh, be careful. Oh, God. Oh, don't. Oh, that looks poisonous. Oh, please don't eat that.
I know. I know. I know. And we, our kids are really, like, curious, especially our boy. And we were just really out in the wilderness for, like, the last week. We were pretty much off grid. We were in northern New Mexico at this ranch. And it was one of those things too, where immediately when we got out of the car and we arrived, they started, like, jumping in the snow. They were so excited. And I was like, let's come over here. Let's, like, say hello. Let's figure out, like, where our rooms are at. And the gentleman that was helping us was like, listen, he was like, by the end of it, you're going to be letting them run around the whole ranch. You won't even know where they're at. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm telling you, by, like, day three came along, we were like, where's Tommy? I don't know. I think I just saw him running around. He's, like, over there, you know. And it was exactly that. I mean, I think, like, once you see them, especially, like, kids, like, you just see how kids thrive. Like,
yeah,
I remember as a kid, like, I really thrived in nature,
mm-hmm,
as a kid. And yeah, there's, like, there, of course, like, we took them tubing, and like, he like flipped over the thing and he hit his head, and I was like, shit,
oh no,
man. Like, you know, I was like, well, there's ice right here. Just like, just go horizontal right here.
That's
on
what
the
you
ice.
Get, that's what you gotta do.
You know what I mean?
Like,
that'll
improvising.
Take the moment more improvising, you know. But it is, like, one of those things that we're going to get hurt. We're bound to get hurt. And then my dad did it, and he, like, whacked his head a few days later. I mean,
and you're supposed to get hurt
a little
bit. And
you're supposed
to get
hurt.
Because that's how you learn.
It's about – and I'll tell – the best story, the best thing that came out of this was, like, our son had never been, like, in proper snow before. And it was, like, our first night there. We were coming back from dinner. We walked into this little cottage that we were staying in. And we were, like – all of a sudden, we were, like, well, where the hell is Tommy, right? It's, like, 10 minutes later. We were getting our gear off, like, getting settled. And I'm, like, oh, wait, he's not here. I walk outside. He's outside, like, playing in the snow. Like, still, it's pitch black. And he's got no mittens on. And I was, like, fuck.
Oh, no.
Oh, fuck. Oh. I was, like, Tommy, mate, get inside. He comes inside. He's like, oh, mommy, my hands are really cold. And I was like, you're about to learn a really big lesson here, okay? This is probably never going to happen again. You're about to experience about 15 minutes of hell. Your hands are frozen. You can't feel them right now. And in a few minutes, they're going to get really, really hot.
Oh.
You're going to burn, burn, burn. And you're going to cry and scream. You're going to be sweating. But it's going to be okay. Just keep it moving. Just keep it moving. And we made the mistake of putting them under hot water. And that's the thing you're never supposed to do that. So, well, we paid for that. He was screaming and hollering. He's like, he was genuinely really, really freaked out. Because it is the most awful feeling in the world.
Of course.
But and then he was fine, of course. But the rest of the trip, he never forgot his gloves.
That's how he learns.
But, like,
yeah,
that's the thing. Like, it's so funny. Like, you know, because that is the thing. It's like, they're going to get hurt. They're going to, like, you know, this and that. But you just kind of got to roll with it and deal.
I don't want to terrify a kid of, like, don't, if you do. Because then they're just going to feel like the world's a terrifying place.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's there are, like, animals and things out in the wilderness. And listen, I've made the huge mistake. I remember I was shooting down in New Orleans, and I was walking down the street with Willow, and I was like, oh my God, look at this caterpillar.
Oh no.
Oh my God, Willow. And I went to pick it up. And I didn't know they had these like fucking like caterpillars down there that they're the black ones. Anybody from down south is going to be like, you're an idiot.
Why did you touch that?
Why'd you touch that thing? And they're black caterpillars. And immediately when you touch them, the all the little the hairs like just immediately embed themselves into your fingers or your feet if you step on one. And it is so painful. Beyond painful, and they stay embedded for like, you know, days until they decide to come out. So everything is so sensitive. And I remember being on the street with Will, and I was like, oh God, fuck. Oh, Jesus. Your mommy, are you okay? And I was like, don't ever touch one of those caterpillars down here. I was like, don't ever touch one. I was like, I've learned a really bad, you know, I've learned a lesson. Everything's like, I've learned a lesson. You're learning your lesson. You know, daddy's learning a lesson. But like, that is the only way. It's like,
that's the way you learn.
You know, yeah. And you want them to be appreciate like the environment and being outside and
not be afraid of every little thing. Afraid. But still, like, there are some dangerous things.
Yeah.
That thing that happened to your son happened to my mom when she was, I think, in her 20s, because she's from Miami.
Right, okay.
The first time she saw snow, she did the same thing. She just, like, was fascinated by it. Her hands froze, and she went inside and put them in front of a heater, and she said her skin just blistered immediately.
Oh, God.
And it was excruciating.
Yeah. I didn't know that was a thing you weren't supposed to do.
Is it even room temperature water or cold water? Because you have to slowly...
It's a good question. We should figure it out.
We should figure this out.
Yeah, because it was one of those things, and my husband naturally was like, Tommy, just jump in the shower. We'll turn it on really warm. And I was like, yeah, we'll warm you right up. We'll warm you right up. And then meanwhile, we were just actually making it worse.
Way worse.
And I was like, oh, wow, mommy and daddy are learning a lesson too.
Thank you for teaching us, the whole family, a lesson.
Thanks for taking one for the team, kid.
You know, inside every bit of pain is the seed of a lesson.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how it happens.
Exactly.
Katie, let's look this up so we can give people good advice. I imagine everyone else listening probably knows the answer, and they're shouting it.
Yeah, they're shouting it.
Don't just put it.
Oh, my God. You're so Hollywood. You've forgotten your roots.
Put your hands in frozen broccoli, and the broccoli brings your body temperature. Blah, yeah, blah, blah,
exactly.
Blah, blah.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's what happens when you give Grammarly to your entire team. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Exactly.
Well, Katie's looking this up. Are you guys ever? Have we talked about? Maybe we talked about this the first time you were on years ago. Are you? Is farm life in your future at some point?
No.
You didn't.
No farm life. I mean, I appreciate the farm life, and I so appreciate where I grew up because it was just so. It was just very easygoing and very wholesome. You know, I grew up in a rural Iowa, a town of 700 people. You know, most of my friends back there are still farmers. My dad's a farmhand still. He cannot retire. He loves it. So I love the land and, you know, I love being outdoors, but that's not something that I know that it is probably one of the hardest jobs there is out there, like on a day-to-day basis. Like, you know, my dad's doing chores from like 5 a.m. until the sun goes down and, you know, works on weekends and then, you know, is dependent on the weather, of course, you know, to have. So I know how difficult it is, but it would be too much for me. I couldn't handle it.
Because it must be interesting to sort of find the balance between, like, I don't want to get too soft. However, being a super successful actress is really comfy sometimes.
Yeah.
there's like a nice comfort in, you know, like they're two completely disparate worlds.
Yeah, totally.
So you don't want to go, I would imagine, too far in the like, oh, I don't want to.
Yeah, but I could imagine. We don't have a, you know, we live in LA. We love LA. I wouldn't mind living somewhere a little bit more rural, like just being out in the in the wood. Like, I love the mountains. I love the mountain. Give me any kind of green.
Yeah.
You know, I always sort of tell my husband, I'm like, if there was an ocean in Nashville. And he was like, he's like, I could do that.
It's the only thing.
It really is the only thing. Like, Nashville is one of my favorite places on earth. I'm a huge country music fan. Of course, that has a lot to do with it. But, you know, I like the people there, and I just like the vibe. And it's just a beautiful state. I think it has the more trees than any state that there – I don't know. I was told that, that Tennessee does, and I believe it. It's super green. But – you know, I still kind of think, but he needs to be close to the water.
I grew up in Tennessee.
Oh, you grew up in Tennessee?
Yeah, I did. I'm from Memphis. I was born in Kentucky, but I grew up in Memphis.
Oh, I didn't know that, dude.
Yeah, yeah. But Nashville is a great – Nashville, that part of downtown – and whatever, it's like, you know, a handful of blocks – has become fucking Vegas.
Oh,
like,
it's that, crazy.
Because I was performing there, so I had to go – I went and did a radio thing on the highway, Sirius XM, the highway.
Yeah.
And I'm watching –
by the way, which I listen to all the time.
Oh, that's Lydia, by the way.
And the Garth Brooks channel.
Yeah, Lydia listens to like early 2000s bubblegum pop, and every other channel is like prime country, the highway. Like, it's just all. And I love classic country, modern country. For me, it feels a little like pop music, but so we go down there, and these fucking pedal pubs are baffling to me.
It's crazy.
How can you just drink it on a because you're on a bike? It's okay.
It's really interesting because I actually did that, and I did it with a girlfriend of mine, my best girlfriend from Iowa. We went down there, and I was shooting down there. And we were walking, and I was like, "Is that for real?" She was like, should we get on one? And then so we got on one. But I was like, and we had a beer and we went like, you know, I don't know, half a mile or whatever we got off. But then late night, I mean, there are people on the, and there are no seatbelts. Like, there's nothing holding you there. Yeah. And I'm thinking like, wow, like how many times do people fall off the back of
these
things?
Are people not vomiting? Yeah. Like,
oh, I think they are.
Yeah, they must be. are you actually powering it, or is that just part of the illusion?
I don't know. I think it's got to be a part of the illusion because obviously there's six people that are just absolutely hammered. They're not going anywhere.
No, of course.
So only powering. They're just like powering this.
You know what
stuff,
hardcore
right
drinking
here
needs is rigorous physical exertion.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, it's funny because when I was working down there, I was, you know, working, so I wasn't partying down there. And they go hard from Wednesday to Sunday night. those party buses are just – it's the bachelorette capital of the world.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, you know, all the bachelors are flocking there.
Sure. Of course. Because it's the bachelorette. That's where the bachelorettes are.
You know, but what was so cool about one weekend there, I think I saw John Prine at the Ryman. I saw Billy Idol at some crazy like stadium. And then I saw some great little local – I had some locals give me – not the places on Broadway, but a couple little places off the beaten path to see some music. And then I saw some bluegrass on a Sunday mass sort of situation.
That's amazing.
And I'm like, wow, man, I just saw the best music.
It's great.
And it's not – it is music town. So it's not just country, but there's so many other things that you can take in there. And the food scene there is unbelievable.
That's why I'm wondering if are the carts – are the pedal carts gonna – is it gonna be like an ice cream pedal cart?
Exactly.
And a barbecue pedal cart.
Like, and a little churros pedal cart or something.
Oh, my God.
That'd be
you'd get fully sick. There's no way. You couldn't possibly – they can't possibly be powering that by pedaling it. That must
crazy
be part of the – there's just
no
way.
There's got to be something else.
You would never be. I mean, from what I remember about drinking is that if I got on an exercise bike and tried to pound beers, it would never. It would be terrible. It would not go well at all.
Situation.
Yeah, Nashville's really great. I just know because Lydia is. She definitely. Well, her family is like they're historically ranchers.
Yeah.
And so they have a lot of farm and ranch, and they have cattle farms, and so they. She's always talking about like, oh, we, you know, someday I want to be on a farm. I want to. And she's been leaning so hard on wanting goats. And I'm like, we can't have goats. Oh, but we.
Wait, you can. I mean, there's somebody by our house that lives by our house. I don't know where they're at, but we see them walking the goat with a leash.
Don't let her hear you.
Oh, my God.
I think I've convinced her it's not allowed in our
neighborhood. We saw it again yesterday. And it's this dude, he's got a goat. And their goats are so friendly.
They're like, you know, she says they're like, you know, I solved the problem.
Yeah.
Because goats are fun.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll go up to Cambria, which is in Central California, and there's a there's a goat farm up there that they make a goat milk and goat butter and goat
all the cheese and everything.
And it's called Stepladder Creamery, and it's great. And you can take tours of it.
Wow.
And we always go up there. They have these little Spanish goats called the Manchas. They have these tiny little like tortellini shaped ears, and they act like dogs. They really do act like dogs. And so for one of our Christmas presents was I called the ranch and I said, can I buy a goat and keep it at your ranch?
Yeah.
And thinking they were going to be like, get the fuck out. And they were like, absolutely. So I bought a goat.
Oh, my gosh.
And they've committed like one of the upcoming babies, which will be born in like 6 weeks or whatever. And we're going to go up and then we'll have a goat and then they'll take care of it. They'll have it up there.
Oh, my God. Because
we can't.
Wow. You are genius.
That was a smart thing to do.
That was a really smart thing.
I was very pleased with the engineering on that one.
Oh, my gosh. That was – you nailed that.
It scratched the itch, but we don't have to
– Yeah, no. You don't have to worry about – you don't have to clean up goat shit. That is like the perfect
scenario. By the way, goat shit's adorable. Like, I don't want to
– Is it kind of like rabbit poop?
Yes. It comes out like buckshot. Like, it's just like these perfect little spheres.
Just dry. You don't have to worry about it.
You don't have to worry about it. Yeah, yeah. It's just like they're just like these little Play-Doh fun facts.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just – it is perfection. But if it were up to Lydia, we would have horses and goats and emus and
do you guys have any pets?
No. Well, we had a cat. The cat passed away right before Christmas, which was devastating. But it looks like we're getting a puppy in like
you're getting a puppy.
6 weeks or so.
We recently got an Angora bunny, which is most like, because we have a lot of allergies in our house. And so this was the only thing that Tommy and Pete were not allergic to.
Okay.
Was a rabbit. So, but we just didn't want to have a rabbit in a cage that was just kind of like hanging out or whatever.
Yeah.
And our friends of ours said, they've got an Angora bunny that they're about to, it's about to give birth to. And it's most like a dog. That breed is most like a dog. And we were like, really? And they have the long – she's long, white, furry hair. Her name is Bubbles. But like she goes in a litter box. She trained herself.
Oh, that's amazing.
And she's like a free range bunny.
She just lives out
house. She lives out in the house. She goes out in the courtyard. She hangs out. She eats all the plants. She only eats cilantro and like greens. And she comes to you like when you're like, hey, Bubbles. And you're like, and she comes running, jumps up on your lap. So that could be a good option for you guys too.
That's not a bad idea, although it's just here, you know, up in the hills, there's like mad coyotes.
Yeah.
It's like coyote town.
She just runs around the house.
Just
she
run around
indoor,
the house.
Indoor.
I just feel
running.
Like a door would get left open. Oh, that would be so stressful. That's the thing with having goats here is like, okay, Lydia, let's just, besides the fact that we do not have the facilities to raise goats. There's coyotes, and she goes, oh, well, you just get an emu. And I go, I'm not going to get a fucking emu.
to
she goes, my aunt has an emu on her farm. It protects. I go, I know emus are fucking dinosaurs, but we can't, like, it can't be, well, then we have to get
exactly.
We have to get an elephant because
oh, my God, it's
you know.
So true. Have you seen that documentary? I think you guys would love it. It's the Biggest Little Farm.
No.
You guys will love it.
She's going to want everything in it.
It's so amazing. And it's about this couple in Venice whose dream is they just kind of close up shop on whatever they're doing there. And they buy some land up in like near Santa Barbara. And it's about them turning this like very drought stricken land. It's literally got no life on it and making it into a farm.
God damn it. I already love this.
And it's all about that. The life cycle in which like, well, shit, now we have a goat. Now we need an emu to protect it from the coyotes. But now we've got too many coyotes. So what do we do about offsetting the
coyotes? You have
coyote
to build
cap?
An ecosystem.
And they build an entire ecosystem. And it now it's, you know, without spoiling it, it is it's thriving now. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
But you see
I would
them,
hope that that's
yeah,
how it ends.
It is. But you don't think – like, you know, it takes you on a journey. But it's an amazing – it's so inspiring when you're talking about farming and anything like that because – you realize like there are great ways in that you can bring back land just by employing certain conservation efforts.
I love that.
And between animals and plants and trees, the way and how you plant them, when you plant them, actually like no, you don't plant them in rows. You plant them like in a circular sort of pattern because what that does when it rains, the rain won't just run off. It'll keep the rain going into the soil.
Oh, I love that shit.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. It's The Biggest Little Farm. I think you can watch it after you binge watch Messiah on Netflix.
On Netflix, yeah, yeah. Messiah, which people can watch. Then you watch Biggest Little Farm. It's sort of like the dessert. The Biggest Little Farm is the dessert after you watch Messiah.
Yeah, it's really cool. It really warmed my heart.
I love that. I have so much respect for farms and farmers and farming because even just going up to this goat farm and seeing the ecosystem that they have where they have these like these two Anatolian shepherds that are these massive like pony sized dogs that are so sweet. But if you're an invasive predator, they will fuck your shit. They like are lion hunting dogs.
Wow.
And so like just seeing and knowing that some people have the ability to look at the land and figure out how to draw life out of it, and that's all they need.
Yeah.
When we are so reliant on so many stupid things in our like city lives, and that we take for granted, and so it just I get it. I don't think I would ever be good at it, but I completely understand like just the simplicity of like, you know, it's such a metaphor for life. However much care you give a thing is what's going to grow, and sometimes no matter how much care, it's not going to work, and you got to start over, and you got to be okay with that. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. This place that we just went to up in northern New Mexico is it's called Vermejo, and it's under Ted Turner, who's got millions and millions of property and land that he's preserving, and. One of the things that he's doing, you know, the catalyst from buying all this land was there were only 300 bison, American bison, years ago. And he was like, wait, this is impossible. I want to bring back the bison, but in order to do that, I need to give them a land that's inhabitable and all these things. So over the course of, you know, conserving the land, you know, they were just telling us, you know, they have a river that runs through the properties. I think it's about 500,000 acres. And they no longer in New Mexico had the native fish of Mexico. Like they couldn't find it in all their fishes or all their streams in the lakes. And they're like, wow, it's extinct. Like, and there was somebody that had found one or a few, and they started breeding them or fishing, you know, fishing things or whatever. And they said, well, we're going to put it back into the Vermejo River. And they found out because they employ all the biologists, environmentalists, and they all work together on this property. There's like five or six. It's like the biggest little farm, but like times like 100 what they're doing there with all the animals. And they realized that it had the river had gone up half a temperature. And it gone up half a temperature, not for environmental reasons. That is why all the fish died. But it went up half a temperature because on the edge of the river, they have all the grass. And the grass was being eaten by all the elk. Oh. And so then the river got hot, and then it killed all the natural fish. So what they did is they cleaned out the Vermejo River of all the fish that had just been dumped in there, which took like 2 or 3 years apparently. And then they somehow managed to get the elk population under control by evening out the bull elk to the cow elk, the male female elk. So now they've got that down to like 8,000, which is the ideal number, which is sustainable. So now the grass is growing back along the sides of the river, and now the fish are thriving because it's lowered the temperature of the water.
That's incredible.
And that's what they're doing. They've got like bobcats there that, you know, that they've got now. They've got 5,000 bison. They've got like 500 wild horses. They've got like the elk population. But it's so interesting.
Oh my God, 5,000 bison.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really just, it's all about just, you know, people, special people like that, that can, if we just take an example of like how to conserve, you know, and maintain and sustain all of our animals by just, you know,
paying attention.
Just by paying attention to the environment and what they do. It's, anyway, we're going off on a tangent.
No, it's nice. It's a good tangent because whether you're farming or whether you're like trying to nurture a career or bring back bison, you know, everything relies on everything else. Everything is some kind of a delicate ecosystem that requires care and attention. And again, it's the things that you really nurture in your life are the things that you pay attention to.
Exactly.
So if you're paying attention to this, you know, how do we solve this problem? it just shows like, oh, we could solve a lot more things if we were paying attention to the right things.
That's exactly right.
But just how easy it is to get caught up in our day-to-day, like, you know, distraction-heavy life. I mean, it's the amount of distractions we have in our lives now, our brains were never meant to process.
Yes.
It's just, we're just overloaded all the time.
It's so true, man.
Yeah, so I someday we might have a farm, and maybe I'll have to call and go, what do I do?
I'll be there.
You said a circular pattern I'm supposed to plant the shit. None of this shit grows. But we tried to – Lydia – We have this grapefruit tree that has these really rare grapefruits. It's just been on the property for, gosh, probably 100 years.
Wow.
And we're to understand that it's probably not – like, I don't think it lives a lot past 100 years. So we've been trying to cultivate the grapefruit seeds, and we can get them to sprout.
Right.
And then after sprouting, they just wither, and we cannot figure out. And I know there's a solution. It is a math problem, and I know there's a math problem to figure it out.
Oh my gosh! That's amazing. Grapefruit, by the way, are my favorite food. I love grapefruit. You've got to figure that out.
We have got to figure it out.
Okay, and help us out.
She also she found these apples that I think they only grow. Maybe at the base, I'm throwing this out, maybe at the base of Mount Rainier, but they're like these green apples that are pink on the inside.
God. What?
And they're unfucking believable. The best apple you've ever had in your life. And there's only a handful of places that actually grow them. And so she was like, oh my God, we have to like grow these down here.
It's an apple farm. You need to like start.
They won't grow down here because it's too much of a desert climate. But, you know, it's just. It knowing that there are things out there in the world that if you just give them care and cultivate them, will bear fruit.
Yes.
Maybe it's because I'm getting older, but that idea is really sexy to me. Like, oh, you could just make a thing out of nothing. But you could just make a thing.
No. It's true. My husband is doing that now with a ficus because ficus are really finicky to grow or to kind of keep alive. And we've got a beautiful ficus that we've been growing, and now he's like, this is a really great ficus tree. So now he's trimmed it, and now he's trying to grow his own ficus.
Yeah.
But it's that. He's like, he's getting it to like sprout, and it's all coming, and he's like, I think I'm stuck. Like, I need what's the next thing? What's the next thing that I'm not doing? But it is, and there's so much gratification in that, you know, where you're nurturing something, you're cultivating, and it's growing, and it's, you know, it's
that was
cool.
One of the other Christmas presents I got. Yeah. Lydia was
we can also grow pot too. just keep it simple. You know what I'm saying? We do live in California.
Oh my God. Yeah. You know, I miss that, but you know, again, cause I can't do anything. And even some of the CBD stuff, I'm like, you know, like because I played golf in Hawaii, and Lydia said, well, you know, my shoulder got tight, so I can put a CBD patch on there. I was like, there can't be any THC in there. And so it was one of those like, no, but it's such a gray area with CBD right now. And
it very much
everyone
is.
Thinks it like cures everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, when are we gonna, and I know it's very helpful.
Yeah.
But you start reading about it, and there's a lot of like, well, not enough research is done yet, so we kind of need to see. But it seems very
promising.
It's
still like the wild, wild west with all that stuff.
It still is a little bit the wild, wild west with all that stuff. Yeah. Do you grow weed or you don't?
We haven't grown weed yet.
No.
But I say yet. I say yet.
But it is. You know, it's like it's interesting that just – you know, if you even just grow a simple thing.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, my God, I nurtured this. I guess anything in my life that I, you know, tend to the soil, oh my God, if I paid more attention to my kids, if I paid more attention to my job, if I paid more attention to being present, it's like you start extracting these really amazing life lessons. I got Lydia this thing called Blumenbox, and it's basically they just send you once a month like a bunch of different seeds and the soil and little tools.
Whoa.
And you can, you know, like grow. Katie's ear just
worked up. Oh my God, that's so cool.
I haven't gotten the first one yet, so I don't know what it was called.
Oh my God, what a
brilliant
idea. Our kids would love that. I would love that. Yeah, what a great thing to do with the family, right?
Yeah, you can either just get seeds or you can get, they'll send you like an upgraded box. They'll actually send you the soil and the tools and stuff.
Okay, I'll need that upgraded box.
Oh, and then I also subscribed to
you get the real upgrade? Will they actually send somebody with the
yeah. Hi, I'm Ted. I'm gonna attend to your land. And then there was I wish I could remember the name of it, but I also in conjunction with that, a separate, like, a fairy box where they'll send you, like, fairy shit so you can just put, like, little, like, fairy scenes around your garden.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it was actually pretty outdoorsy Christmas.
Yeah,
for
you did really, really well.
Yeah, for an indoor kid.
You did really well. Yeah.
Not used to it at all.
You kind of nailed it.
What did you score for, what was your Christmas this year?
What was my Christmas? So I got an earring. I got
nice.
This little. I got
very
little,
pretty.
I got a little earring. And what else did we do? I got my husband just wanted. I really didn't want to get it for him, but he really wanted the new iPhone. So I was like, "Am I really just getting you the new iPhone?" And he was like, "Yes, you're really. That's all I really want."
It's so
really
we can
want.
Look up YouTube videos to figure out how to grow that ficus tree,
and also take pictures of me.
And take a look. The camera's amazing.
That's the thing. Like the camera really is so amazing. And when we were on vacation, of course, like he helps me out with my social media and he takes photos and stuff. And of course, we take photos of the whole family and everything. But he was like, "Oh, no. Actually, I think you're going to have to get your own camera now because I don't have the new one." And it was like, no, because this is going to get really annoying really fast. He's like, "Yeah. I finally have like a phone that just works, is a camera. Like, and now I'm just carrying around a
camera. Amazing
camera.
Just okay.
Yeah,
phone.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. So that was nice. So we had a really nice.
That's nice. Really nice. How do you not go overboard with the kids? Like, how do you not go, "Oh my God, let's just give them 200 presents"?
You know what? It's really that is really hard, and it's a really good question. We make a really good point of there's an organization that I'm a part of called Baby to Baby, mm-hmm. which is all about donating gently used goods mm-hmm. And baby essentials for kids from like age 0 to 12. And I'm glad I'm getting a chance to plug it because they work. Not only with like about I want to say it's like 100 organizations just in the local Los Angeles county, like shelters, homeless shelters, foster kids, by distributing all these items. We mm-hmm. have a big warehouse. So anybody, any organization, nonprofit can come to the warehouse and take whatever they need. And they also distribute in times of disaster. So, you know, when the fires are happening here, I'm sure they're sending stuff to Australia as we speak. So they're an amazing organization. So they're always in need of any like books, toys, clothes, you know, anything that you can send to them. So every year before the holidays, we usually start around Thanksgiving time. We kind of go through all the kids' things and we start to explain to them, you know, Christmas is coming along. There are a lot of kids out there whose folks can't afford to buy things. And so it's a good way for us to be, you know, thoughtful and to kind of pay things forward as we do, donate things forward. But also start for them to kind of understand that, you know, we need to give back more than we receive.
That's nice.
So it's a struggle a lot, mostly with our son who's a little bit younger. And he's like, but I love this stuffed bear.
He doesn't understand yet, right.
But I love this stuffed bear. And then so we kind of, you know, we have to have a big talk about it or whatever. But, you know, I'm also very clear. I'm like, you guys will get what you give back, you know? And so that's I think the conversation starts with that first. And then they do their Christmas list. And of course their Christmas list will probably have like 12 or 13 things on them that they want. And then it's like, but you know, Santa doesn't bring everything on the list.
That's such a great fallback to blame it on another dude. I don't know why that fucking guy. What a piece of shit. I know you had 12 things he brought in.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, you know what I mean?
That's how it works.
So it's like one of those things that they'll get like Tommy got a bike. And he got a basketball, and then he got his stocking stuffed with some bits and pieces, like a terrarium or something, and like, you know, a car that he wanted. And Willow got like a light for her bedroom, which she really actually needed because she didn't have. And then she got some hair dye because that's like all the rage now. And
oh, really? Kids are dyeing their hair?
Yeah, she really wanted, like, she's been wanting to dye her hair for 2 or 3 years. And I was like, no, but it actually happened. And but the thing was, I realized that she finally didn't believe in Santa because when she saw it, she looked at me. She goes, "Thank you." And I was I mean, you should be thanking Santa. Yeah. And I was like, I had a feeling like this was the first year she didn't believe in Santa. But I think the deal was like, how is it? Because I don't remember finding out about that. But I was like, she must think like if she finds out about it and she cops to it, then she doesn't get presents from Santa anymore.
Right.
So like she's gonna keep it on the down low. And I'm just wondering like
how many more years should be like 17. Hey,
yeah, exactly.
Thanks,
great Santa.
It's kind of funny that from 0 to anywhere between 10 and 13.
Yeah.
13 beyond is where we have to start unraveling the lies. Okay, many things we told you were not true.
Yeah.
And you have to unlearn a lot of it. Yeah. And then you get out of high school and then you get into college. You're like, oh, shit I learned in high school wasn't true. And then you get out of college and you're like, oh, a bunch of shit they told me in college wasn't true. Yeah, it's just basically living this life just about like unraveling lies that you've been told your whole life.
You're so, so true. Oh my God, it's so terrible.
I think that's great. Though I think it's, you know, you could always tell the kids we had a conference call with Santa's conference call.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So, you know, like we're really trying.
Yeah, Santa's actually over Christmas this year, it turns out, kids. Like, it's just like, you know,
you're gonna give mommy that bear or mommy's gonna put your hands in snow.
Yeah, yeah.
So exactly. I don't know. Like you there decide. You know, yeah, if we can't win you over with the charitable angle.
Exactly.
I like to ask because my inclination would be to just give the kids everything, but I've talked to a lot of friends who, you know, who are very privileged but trying to strike the balance between like not turning their kids into dicks.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Who expect everything.
I mean, I had a friend literally go through it the other day. She has like a 4-year-old, I believe, and the 4-year-old got a lot of presents because grandma and grandpa and that side of the family, and then the other side of the family was Hanukkah, so she was getting multiple presents on each day of Hanukkah and stuff. And then, you know, they just went to like Rite Aid or whatever, and then the little girl was like, oh, I want this.
Oh.
You know, and she was like, no, you're not having that. Like, because they get so used to the idea of like getting. And then, and she goes, and as a result of saying no, we had the biggest meltdown in like aisle 2 of Rite Aid.
No.
You know what I mean? So she's like, that is that moment where like they not only are they getting so many presents, but they're also getting a shit ton of sugar.
Yes.
And so like you're just like
and attention
and the whole thing.
They're getting that endorphin rush of ripping open a thing.
Totally.
It's
totally.
All the soil. It's all what kind of soil are you going to grow your kid in?
Exactly.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Well, I want to, we should talk about Messiah.
Yeah.
So that people know, is it one of those things that you can't talk about too much without spoiling it?
No.
Or can you talk?
No, I can,
oh,
I can
good,
talk
good,
about
good.
It. You know, the thing that, drove me to this series. Well, first of all, it was 10 episodes and rarely do you get to read 10 episodes, a complete season of a show prior to doing it. And I was just coming off of a show and I didn't intend on going back to work. But, you know, if there's a thing called binge reading, I binge read the whole thing and then I was like, shit, honey, I'm sorry. I'm going back to work. You know, it was that thing. And I had never read anything that had such a large global perspective, that encompassed like the globe in terms of various different belief systems. You know, the show is shot in Arabic and in Hebrew and in English. You know, and it speaks about Islam, Judaism, Christianity. Or if you're agnostic, you know, that's also another form of belief.
Of course.
So you don't have to necessarily subscribe to any one of these. And it doesn't purport to take any sides of any of these religions. But what it is, it's a man that is essentially gained like notoriety for some events that have taken place in the Middle East on the border of Syria with some refugees. And in the nature of like, you know, social media, it goes viral.
Mm-hmm.
And I play a CIA agent who sees this event go viral, and I look at it immediately as a threat, and that this is somebody who's going to wreak havoc on a global scale. And so I go on to the pursuit of finding this man. And the man, that should be noted, he never calls himself the Messiah.
So you're basically a Jesus hunter.
I'm a Jesus hunter, basically. And what's interesting about the show, what I love, is that there's a number of various characters and storylines, and they are this really intricately woven story that's unraveled as you move through the ten episodes through the perspectives of all these different characters. One being, you know, Messiah or Al-Masih is the character that he goes by, but he's really holding a mirror up to the world, up to each one of these characters and these individuals, and is really asking them, like, no, like, I know you're all in search of something, whether it's actual freedom. If you're a refugee, you see it through the eyes of a refugee, a Syrian refugee. You see it the eyes from a pastor in Texas who's, you know, struggling with his church. And you see it from a woman who's professionally, like, this is her job to find this man. She's mm-hmm. like, you know, he's a con man. But she's inwardly struggling with a lot of things personally. She's living a very isolated life. So it's really what we project onto the world. And he holds a mirror to each of these characters, into the world itself, and asks, and we're forced to ask ourselves, like, what are we projecting? What are the impact that we're making? And so it's a really, it provokes a conversation. And it's, I'm so encouraged, because that's what I loved about the show. It's such an international cast. Like I say, it's in multiple languages, and it's really, but it feels like a thriller.
Right.
And it's, if you know, one episode like feels very threatening, and another one is very provocative, very thought provoking. And I encourage people to watch it. Like, it's a communal experience, because the takeaway from, you know, my takeaway on it was so very different from my husband's takeaway, from like anybody, like my other friends who are watching it. And it begs you to almost dissect each episode after you've watched it, or talk about it, like, because you'll identify with the different character.
You almost have a show after a show that talks about that.
Yeah,
show.
Yeah, exactly.
Really interesting, yes, idea.
So there you go.
Talking
there you go.
Messiah.
Yeah. So it's great, and the response that I've been getting so far, you know, it just started airing January 1st, but people, like, that was the intention of our show, for it to spark conversation with, like, you know, in such divisive times. So you don't have to believe in anything or any particular religious, you know, faith for you to take away. You know, the Messiah is called Messiah, and people get maybe some idea that we're, like, you know, promoting one religion or faith over the other. But it's not that. We're asking people to, like, look inward. It forces you to look inward.
That's really interesting, especially in a time where literally almost anything you can believe, anything yeah. you want to believe
yeah.
or believe, can be supported by whatever sort of, you know, rabbit holes you go down.
Yeah, and propaganda.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all, you know, I think what's really great about this show is that it forces you to put yourself in someone else's shoes. I think, like, you know, we experience a particular kind of narrative. You know, we've been fed a particular kind of narrative about a particular kind of region or religion or group of people. And that's not indifferent to, you know, how people are receiving their news in other parts of the world.
Sure.
And so this show really lifts the curtain, you know, a little bit, and you really see at the end of the day, in my personal experience and having shot in these places as well, is that we really are more alike than we are different. And at the end of the day, my God, all we want is, like, freedom for our family. We want safety. We want health.
Right.
And I think that the show really taps into that in a really profound way. And it's really that's exciting for me, that there's, like, a dialogue that's starting now within, you know, different groups of people, and people are realizing, you know, the impact that, you know, something like this conversation can have.
And also fun, I would imagine, fun for you to be able to, you know, like, you might do a project that's just fun, and then a project that's really thought-provoking,
sure.
and then a project that challenges your own belief
for
system
sure.
that you, like, being able to have that kind of a career mm-hmm. is, it sounds great, and you got to take 7 months off. I don't know. I think it sounds
yeah.
to me like you have the perfect career.
Yeah,
you get time with your family. You got a fucking rabbit.
Yeah. And then I went, and then after, you know, after this, the first movie that I went back to do was The Craft, which is, like, the night.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
what,
with Zoe Lister Jones? She reimagined the
How
great.
How did I not
90-
know they were? I love
oh
that movie.
Oh my God, Jason Blumhouse,
Fairuza Balk.
Yes.
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved The Craft.
Yeah. So it is fucking good. I'm really excited. I just wrapped it. So we've got, you know, Zoe Lister Jones had this really great, brilliant idea about this reimagination. and it's really contemporary, kind of on the heels of the Me Too movement. She pitched it to Blumhouse, and he was like, let's go make it. So Sony's made it, and it's really – it really tackles like – so like real societal norms right now, and
that's spectacular.
It is.
Oh my god, I love the
craft. Yeah,
Aruza Balk, Nev Campbell, who else? Yeah. Robin Tooney.
Robin Tooney. Yeah, Tooney. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Amazing soundtrack.
So, yeah. Oh, so god, now we've got a young female cast. It was
fantastic.
All female led.
I'm so excited to see that.
Yeah.
When does that come out?
We don't have a release date. Okay. So we just wrapped it. So I imagine maybe like spring, summer.
Oh my god, that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
We're gonna be all over that.
Yeah.
It is, if she doesn't already know about it, she's gonna be right into that.
Yeah,
too.
You're gonna dig it. So
I do notice some witchy candles around the house.
Yeah.
From time to time.
Yeah.
Like she goes to a
see
like
the
her.
Sage, and she probably like the Palo Santo.
Well, she
and
goes
all that.
To this place and she gets these candles in there and there are I notice there are different oils.
Yes.
That make it or sometimes I'm a shower person and she's a bath person, but if I take a bath or go, let me put mix
a little
some
bit
oils.
Of lavender, a little
yeah,
lavender.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She does like these
little
oils
in the bath. A little bit of lavender, a little bit of lemon, a little
she
bit of
she might be a secret witch.
Yeah.
She might be a secret witch and just doesn't really talk openly about it.
Oh my god, I love it.
There's some witchy things that happen around us.
I love it.
Katie Levine, did we ever figure out what you're supposed to
do?
Warm water.
Warm water.
Not hot water.
God,
because you probably want to get the circulation going
exactly,
again, right?
Exactly. Warm water it is.
Warm water.
Not a steamy hot shower for your
not
kid.
not a heater, not a steamy hot shower.
Exactly.
Don't put your hands on or in a stove. Warm, just tepid water to get the circulation flowing again. I hope we've saved someone's hands today on the show. Michelle Monaghan, you have always been so amazing and coming on. I think this is like your third or fourth time coming on, and I just appreciate you so much.
I appreciate you.
And I don't know is like if Pete's around and you guys ever want to like
hang out
or have a dinner or
Let's
something.
Let's do it. I would love that.
You know, like
I would love that.
Because we it's, you know, I feel like it almost feels like Legend of Zelda with friends as you get older. You're like, every good friend that you meet is a treasure.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you got to just, you know, there's a lot of not great people in the world or people
totally.
That don't.
That you don't vibe
sink
with.
To your values.
Exactly.
Yes, yes. That you
exactly.
don't vibe with.
Yeah.
And so it just, I do feel like that idea of choosing who to hang out with and sort of carefully.
Yeah. It's like a curating
tilling
group.
Your friend garden.
Yeah, yeah.
If you will.
I'll till mine if you till mine.
Tilling your friend garden to just make sure that it's filled with good people. But you're just, and you guys just seem like the coolest parents,
Thank
too.
Thank you.
So when we do have kids, if I do text you for every once in a while, I'll be like, what do I do if ...
Done. Done. I would love that.
A lot of it's probably going to just be like, don't fucking worry about it. Just
it
relax.
Is a lot of it is don't worry about it. But yeah, no, I got so much advice on that front. It's like, yeah, definitely.
Well, that's what it seems like is you know, if you helicopter parent, then your kids are going to get messed up.
Yeah.
But if there's that balance between like being present, but not overly.
Yeah. Exactly.
And how do you find that?
So true.
I don't know, because I imagine when you have a kid, a lot of chemical things kick in.
For sure.
That your body is telling you, like, shield this, stop that. Whoa, but, you know, just, and so I have no predictions for how, what type of parent I'm going to be.
Yeah, and you won't know until as you move through it. The one thing that I've always sort of, you know, Kevin Bacon gave me the best advice. He was like, just always remember this too shall pass. So, like, when you're in that dark, dark moment where, like,
you're
not sleeping.
When you're in aisle two of the
writing. Oh, yeah. And this too shall pass.
Yeah.
And then when you're having, like, the most beautiful moment, like, you know, I was in the tub last night with both the kids. And we had, like, a great night. And we all slept, like, 11 hours.
Oh.
And I was, like, in that tub. We were all playing and, like, splashing each other and shit. And I was, like, I had that feeling. I was, like, this too shall pass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's about... It's about cherishing the moments that when they're good and everything's kind of like singing and you're like, okay, this is what really matters.
That's an interesting – I've never heard that take on it before, because this too shall pass I've always heard as being like when negative things happen.
Yeah.
But it's also a reminder
– To be present.
To be present.
And to appreciate it.
Because it's all going to pass.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God
yeah.
damn it.
Yeah.
My brain just spews out of it. It makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of stuff, a lot of philosophies, a lot of religious laws, they all have that core idea of like live, just like being as present as possible.
It is. It's true. It's like we really live by, like, I recently explained like what the golden rule was to my son about a month ago. It was right around the holiday time. We're not religious people. We're very spiritual, but we really, really do live by the golden rule. Like, do unto others as you have them do unto you. And I was really, and I just used that. I was like, listen, like, you know, I was on holiday and he was kind of being a dick and to his sister. And I was like, listen, I was like, do you realize like early, like Willow just gave you whatever she was doing. She wanted to share it with you. But earlier in the day, you remember, you know, like when she asked you if she could use that or try that or whatever, you were really, you know, you said no. And I said, I just want to be a reminder, like what Willow just did for you right now is the golden rule. So that's an example of the golden rule that I was trying to explain to you. And I wasn't like trying to be a jerk about it, but I wanted him to realize and see, like, you know, she let it go when he didn't do it. But then like when she did it later for him, you know, and I said, that's the golden rule. What she just did for you.
Did he absorb that?
Oh, yeah. And he's like, yeah, I know.
Oh, that's great.
So he absorbed it. So it's not like getting upset with him, but I'm just like pointing it out to you. Like, so that's the golden rule. Like, that's how that works.
Yeah.
Right? So maybe next time, you know. It's just slowly implanting like little things into their head.
But it's also understanding what the present is.
Yeah.
Because I feel when we were snorkeling in Hawaii, we came upon these sea turtles that were just so chill. And you can't get too close to them, and you can't, like, you're not allowed to touch them, and you can't touch the coral, so you have to be very careful. But they were the chillest, like, didn't, you know, like, they would just surface right near you. And they all looked like fucking Crush from Nemo. Oh. They all looked like Crush. So I'm in this moment, and I'm like, oh, I got to appreciate that. I'm trying to absorb, like, I'm trying to feel as much of the present as possible. And then I realize, like, oh, that's not like, maybe that's how like a former alcoholic tries to like, oh, I gotta suck in every.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you just have to be here.
Yeah.
And you just have to notice everything.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to feel like some sort of a rush. It's just, it's just you just understanding being, and appreciating that you're in this moment and, you know,
and like breathing it in.
Breathing it in. And, you know, my dad loved turtles and he, you know, so that's how I remember, one of the ways I remember him, and just sort of like experiencing it rather than like, I gotta fucking feel.
Yeah.
I gotta feel, you know, the present like it's a shot of tequila. Like, no, it's just a state. It's like you're not chasing the happiness, you're just being.
Yeah,
being
that's such a great way of. That's just a really great way of putting it. Not chasing the happiness, but just sort of being in the happiness of that already exists right then and there.
I can't wait to watch your show now that we have a working internet.
Yeah, I think you guys will dig it. I think
even just hear you describe it, like just because the different perspectives, and of course, my next question is like, well, is he the? But you can't tell me that.
Yeah.
I have to watch.
Yeah, and everybody's answer will probably be different in terms of
Anytime you ever need anything, I don't know how Lydia or I could be helpful to you or Pete, but well, we're here for you.
If you see any grapefruit missing, my friend?
Oh my God, we will bring you some grapefruits from the trees.
I'll swap you some Meyer lemons for a grapefruit.
Oh yeah, we'll do a lemon swap.
Okay,
that sounds like a gross thing. Do not Google lemon swap. I guarantee you the first page of Google results is disgusting. I'm just taking a guess. Thank you for being here, Michelle Monahan.
Thank you.
The end. That was the IDT&T podcast number 1040 with Michelle Monahan. It's time for Idiot Rap. Idiot Rap, WRAP, like a wrap up? Or is it like RAP, like a rap, like we're having a rap session? God. This is the year I just land on a name for whatever this section is called. But because it is a new year, I've been thinking a lot about, I mean, obviously, you know, everyone makes resolutions. That's what we do after the winter harvest feast. We start a new calendar year. It's a new us. It's a new decade. It's a new everything. So let's like make broad, sweeping, massive changes in our life. And I really have come to, by the way, I used to love the sort of massive change thing, right? Because it gives you a thing to jump to, right? Oh, I'm not happy with whatever, you know, life situation I'm in, or whatever my habits are that I want to change. So I'm just going to
all of a sudden, on a dime, I'm just going to change. I'm just going to do it. And this is the signal. The new year or a new decade is a nice signal to make that sharp turn. And then, obviously, the sort of cliche joke is that, you know, after 2 weeks, you might just sink back into your old habits. So why is that? I don't think it's because we're bad people or we're lazy people or we suck or any of the crap that we tell ourselves to feel bad. I honestly think it generally has a lot to do with just trying to take on too much at once. Habits are difficult to change. It's sort of like, think about, let's say you want to change your fitness regime or your work habits or whatever. If you wanted to, let's say, learn the clarinet, for example, you wouldn't just give up after a week. Oh, I didn't master the clarinet in a week. Because you know that's not a realistic goal. So why do we treat ourselves the same way? Like, we expect to just massively change our habits or our lives. And then if it doesn't work or it's hard or we can't really figure out how to do it in a week or two, we're just like, fuck it. So this is what I propose to you, all right? Instead of trying to embrace, it's good to have like big ticket goals if you want them. If you want them. I'm not saying you don't have to do any of this. You don't have to make big changes for the new year if you don't want to. If you're happy and content with where you are, good. Good for you. That's great. That's a great place to be. But I think it's good if you want to have like big, you know, giant goals, but maybe commit yourself to focusing on incremental change. I honestly think, you know, incremental change. Someone posted something on Reddit. Might have been in the Get Motivated subreddit, but it was just on basically like the graph of compound interest and how it just sharply goes up after a little bit of time. And so if you just focus on incremental change, you know, just kind of whatever you can get done in a day, even if it's like when I'm practicing piano, some days I only have like 10 minutes, you know, like if Lydia and I are going out to dinner, and I get ready before she does, and I have 10 or 15 minutes, I'll just go sit down at the piano and noodle around for 10 or 15 minutes. Now, is that 10 or 15 minutes going to make me an expert piano player? No, but I got to check the box for the day. So not only do I feel good about myself because I actually did it, but it does, like, every little piece does contribute to the overall goal. So what if we just kind of approached life that way, like we embrace the incremental? Because over time, which moves very quickly as we are living in 2020 now in the future, 2 months will go by before you know it, 4 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, and all of those little incremental changes that you embraced on a, you know, on a daily basis will add up and it will blow your fucking mind. So give future you the gift of incremental positive deposits, I suppose you want to say. You know, my fitness trainer, Tom, always just says, like, oh, just make daily deposits. You're just making little deposits in your account, in the account of you. And then, you know, like, the example being that if I make fitness deposits and then all of a sudden, you know, I go through like a month where I get sick and I'm traveling or something happens or I, you know, hurt my foot and I can't work out, I've made a bunch of deposits that basically allow me to sort of live off that savings for like, you know, however much time. And then when I'm able, and then I just kind of get back into it. That's why I don't stress about like fitness stuff anymore. I used to really freak out if there was like 3 weeks where I couldn't do it or a month or whatever. Go, oh, I got to start all over. No, I don't start all over. It doesn't matter. I do it when I can. I make the deposits when I can. And you can do that with your habits too. So embrace incremental change. There's so much power in what feels so small, because those are the building blocks. Those are the molecules. If you just looked at molecules, if you looked at molecules through a microscope, you'd go, well, what the fuck are these? These aren't anything. These are just little globs. They'll mean anything. But then as you start to get more of a galactic view, you see like, oh my God, these little tiny incremental things are the building blocks of everything. So embrace your habit molecules. I hope this wasn't too rambly. I didn't really think it out before I started saying it. It's just all been kind of swirling in my head. But I really do believe that embracing these kind of incremental changes will help you achieve success. Because again, when you try to make, you know, when you, it's like, if you want to embrace fitness, you're not going to get into shape in one session. So don't kill yourself in the gym. Or if you want to write a novel, you're not going to write it sitting down one time. So don't beat yourself up if you don't write the perfect novel in one session or a week. You know, like those are the types of goals that when you put that kind of expectation on yourself, and then chances are you're not going to get in shape in one session. You're probably going to injure yourself, or you're not going to write a novel in one session. You're probably going to hate writing after that because you're putting so much pressure on yourself. You're just kind of setting yourself up to fail for yourself because you're going to go, oh, I didn't do it. I didn't write a novel in a day. I suck, man. Fuck this. I'm never going to do this. And then it's painful. And then you avoid it because you're ashamed. So it's not about, it's just about the conversation you have with yourself and how you define success and how you accept your daily habits into your life. And then sooner or later, those little incremental things just become a part of you again. You know, they become a part of you. And then you will be a novelist or a piano player or a fitness guru or whatever it is that you want to achieve. You can achieve what you focus on. So feed yourself good habits, feed yourself a good personal inner dialogue, feed yourself, make it easy for yourself to succeed by embracing incremental change. So there you go. If you can sort through any of all and all that stuff, I appreciate you listening to this. I hope you have a wonderful, happy new year, and I'll see you in your ears real soon.
ID 10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Gen Z high school girls have gone through a lot. So what could and did send a shockwave through a group of 50 of them competing in one of the nation's biggest scholarship competitions? I'm your host, Shimo Liai, and I'm going to take you behind the scenes of the Distinguished Young Women Competition. I was Nevada's competitor 20 years ago, but this time, a Supreme Court decision catapults all 50 girls into the center of a nationwide debate about their rights. These girls, who have spent months fighting to make it to nationals, are faced with a tough decision. Do they speak up for their political beliefs, or do they stay focused on winning the money?
I think it's going to get ugly.
Follow the competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of the competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.